Well, welcome back, everyone. We're glad you joined us and for another Basic Conversation. And Father Basic, for anyone keeping track, this is our last session for season four.
We've done four seasons.
Four seasons. Chris is telling me we're at six seasons.
Chris is our
producer, our audio guy, and just does wonderful work at WGTE.
He does
so we'll get the right amount, but we've done a lot.
Let's just leave it at that.
We've done a lot, and we've got 46 episodes in. Chris has raised a flag, and
a lot of podcasts. People actually listen to podcasts, Brad. I don't know if you know that or not. But people do it when they're walking or riding in a car or, for my podcast, when they're suffering insomnia.
Right. Well, an engaging person to talk about today, Dorothy Day. And let me start by having you react to this quote from David O'Brien.
A Catholic historian, by the way.
Yes, the heavyweight himself. He said this about Dorothy Day, that she was the most significant, interesting, and influential person in the history of American Catholicism. That is quite...
There's probably a lot of people would be surprised at that because they never heard of Dorothy Day, you know. But I buy that. I agree with that. David O'Brien's a really fine historian, and you can find a lot of evidence to support that position about Dorothy Day. So what do we need to do by way of background for her? She was born in Brooklyn, I know, in 1897, and she lived up to 1980. So that's her lifespan and so on. She traveled around as a youth because her father was moving, and she ended up at the University of Illinois, and was not a terribly serious student, but she was very involved in causes and very interested in justice and peace issues and so on. After she left University of Illinois, she went to New York. She was very much involved in socialist causes and had a lot of interaction with communists, American communists. She had a lot of kinship with them. Went to New York and she wrote. She was a writer. I mean, she loved to write and did write and was writing for a socialist magazine in New York. She got involved in the suffragist movement, the movement for women's right to vote. And she, in one occasion, was demonstrating outside the White House, was arrested and thrown into jail. The first of many, many, I don't know how many times she was arrested and went to jail for her causes. But that was the first time. And there's a lot of stories about how roughly she was treated. That the people in the prison threw her down against a chair and all of this. And so on. I noticed when she wrote about herself, well, it wasn't that bad. So I found that interesting. She didn't play it up. She sort of played it down. But there she was in jail because she would walk outside the White House protesting and asking for women to be able to vote, which eventually, of course, saw happen. So then, this is probably important. She was married, got divorced, and then she had a common law marriage with Forster Batterham. Forster, F-O-R-S-T-E-R, who she loved deeply. And then she had a baby, Tamar, T-A-M-A-R, her daughter Tamar. She loved her and was close to her through her whole rest of her life. and so on. I should tell a story in between here. I tell my students this a lot. When I was in New York, I was friends with a lot of the Josephite priests, and they were friends with Eileen Egan, who was a very close friend with Dorothy Day, Eileen Egan. And one night, I'm a student at Fordham, and one night I had the chance to go to a small meeting, small group, to meet with Dorothy Day and Eileen Egan with these Jesuits. I don't know, there might have been five or six people. And I thought I was too busy. I had to study. And I'd often tell my students, keep your priorities straight as you move through your academic life. I consider that one of the big mistakes of my life. Mm-hmm. I could have had an evening with Dorothy Day and passed it up. Anyway, why did I bring that up? That's my personal...
That was your segue from...
into something, but I forgot what. Anyway, she was writing for a socialist publication and so on, and she had a common law marriage with Forster Batterham.
Yep.
And she then had a daughter, Tamar, and for reasons that aren't entirely clear, she got Tamar baptized as a Catholic. My own sense is that she did it so her daughter would have a stable religious life to guide her. And shortly after that, she herself became a Catholic. And so now she's living the Catholic faith, and Forster doesn't want any part of it. And so what people commonly thought was, okay, they broke up, he wasn't into this thing of baptism and church and religion and all that. And so they broke up, fine, and she went on with her life. But we later, things that were discovered after Dorothy Day's death was she loved Forster her whole life. She was ready to do anything to get him back. She'd say, well, we'll have no religious images in the house. You know, I won't do any talking about religion in the house. She desperately wanted to have a relationship with him. She loved him her whole life. And he wouldn't have it. And so when I think of Dorothy Day sacrificing, we now know that was the biggest sacrifice for her. So, Dorothy Day, Forster Batterham.
She had the autobiography, and the title was The Long Loneliness.
Yeah.
What a haunting title.
Yeah, she was good at, she's a great writer.
Yeah.
And The Long Loneliness, yeah, that tells her story. And I think it's a revealing title now that we know about Forster Batterham.
Right.
And how much she loved him always. And even years later, still hoped there was a way they could get back together. And she was willing to sacrifice so much and make life easy for him and not push her religion on him. Yeah. So where are we at? She's now...
She was, should we talk about the Catholic worker movement?
Oh, you have to talk about that.
Great.
And there's background to it, too.
Yep.
So after she becomes a Catholic, it's sort of a aimless existence. She doesn't have a clear sign of what she wants to do or how she wants to move or how she wants to make a difference. And then comes along a French peasant, Peter Morin, M-A-U-R-I-N, Peter Morin, who was a self-educated Catholic, interested and an expert in social justice. He comes to the United States. He's self-taught. He doesn't have a degree or anything, but he knows Catholic social teaching, especially what we call Christian personalism. In other words, he was very much interested in how human encounters enrich our life. So, and he knows Catholic social teaching, including Rerum Novarum by Pope Leo XIII. And so he, I think, seeks out, it wasn't accidental, I think, he sought out Dorothy Day, comes and appears at her in her apartment and begins to talk, and she becomes fascinated by him. And together they then founded what we know as the Catholic Worker Movement. She learned from him, she listened to him. He was the brains behind a lot of things that they ended up doing together. And on May 1st, 1933, they published for the first time the first issue of the Catholic Worker newspaper. It sold for a penny a copy. It's still produced today, still sells for a penny a copy. It had 100,000 readers at one time. I really don't know what it is right now. It's still popular, but not as popular as it once was. So they're starting a whole movement. It's not just a paper they're publishing. That became her vehicle. That was her forum. She wrote in it constantly. That was where she could express her views and so on. And Peter Morin not wanted to start a movement. And in addition, his other idea was to publish a paper and to start a communal farm where people would come and live together and on the farm and grow crops together and help the environment and do all kind of good things. And the other thing that he wanted to do, and they actually did, was found then houses of hospitality.
Start original one in New York City.
In New York City, yes. Lower Manhattan, Mott Street comes to my mind. And so the whole idea of that was you live with the poor. You'd get the people off the street, get them a place to stay for the night. And Dorothy Day then lived for 50 years within this kind of setting. She would describe it. She lived with where she had to take care of incontinent men. She had to sleep with smelly bodies. She had to deal with people who were not always well-disposed and so on. And she describes all of that. And she lived with them and took care of them and so on, loved them. She was a big fan of Dostoevsky's Brothers Karamazov, the novel. In there, Father Zosiman, the wise figure, says that love in reality is a harsh and dreadful thing compared to love in dreams. Love is a harsh, that was one of Dorothy Day's favorite lines. Love is a harsh and dreadful thing.
Reality check.
Yeah, and so she knew that in terms of smelly bodies, right. You know, of being with people. And so love in reality is a harsh and dreadful thing. One of the great lines from Dostoevsky that was her sense. In other words, one of the things we're going to get out of Dorothy Day is that love is not easy. We're supposed to love our neighbor as ourselves. It's not easy. We have to overcome. I mean, she'll talk about it in her diaries or articles about how it was hard for her. She got tired of this, and she got upset with people and wanted it to go better. But she, So here's Robert Coles. He became a well-known writer, Harvard professor, Robert Coles, C-O-L-E-S. He was finishing up his studies at Columbia, getting his doctorate. And I think it was right at the end of his exams or something. It's unknown reason, he gets on a subway and goes down to Mott Street to see Dorothy Day. And he gets there, And Dorothy Day is off in a corner with a woman who's obviously drunk and who's chattering constantly and so on. And Robert Cole just stands there, and Dorothy Day's over here. And so the woman at one point sort of stopped the conversation, and Dorothy Day got up, walked over to Robert Coles and said, "Were you waiting to see one of us?" Blew Coles away. The rest of his life, that phrase, "one of us," "one of us," that's how she saw the poor people she worked with. One of, I try to use that a lot in my own, think about some of us Catholics don't like Vatican II. Some of us Catholics do like Pope Francis. Some of us. In other words, it creates an immediate sense of solidarity. She had a wonderful sense of solidarity, that we're all united, we're all God's children. You know, we were all blessed by God. We all have gifts from God. I'm thinking, were you waiting to see one of us? Robert Coles used that phrase in writing about Dorothy Day. Another thing comes to mind. Somebody brought, they at the Catholic worker houses, which are all over the world right now. I don't know the number right now, how many there are, but they're all over the world. They're in a lot of major cities around the United States, Catholic worker houses, where people live with the poor and bring the homeless off the streets and try to take care of them and so on. And they rely on donations, rely on people helping out, people who support the and a lot of those Catholic worker persons became well-known individuals. In other words, they learned from that. They carried the Catholic worker mentality with them into their lives, general lives. People didn't, you know, they might have lived at a Catholic worker house for 5 years, and then they come out of that, and they live that life generally, which is good. So one time a woman brought a very a rich woman, wealthy woman, brought to Dorothy Day a ring, very valuable ring. And so Dorothy Day took the ring, and there was a poor lady who came in to see her, and she gave the ring to this lady. Well, the other people in the Catholic world were incensed. They said, "You could have sold that. We would have had money to take care of, do all kind of good things." And her response was, "What makes you think poor women aren't pleased by wearing beautiful things? Mm. What makes you think that they can't have a beautiful things?" I didn't get those words exactly right, but it's that was the gist of it.
Right.
You know, poor woman, yeah, she deserves this ring, or this ring will please her, make her happy. So it's another example of how Dorothy Day saw things and so on.
She was also really active with opposition to wars.
Yeah.
World War II, Vietnam War.
Exactly. Perfect, yeah. Yeah, she was a total pacifist. She even opposed World War II. Mm-hmm. That was very unusual. There were not many pacifists about World War II. And she, the things that she always was willing to demonstrate her position. So during World War II in New York City, there were drills periodically where sirens would go off and people would go to shelters or preparing for a bombing of New York City or of the United States. And when that happened, Dorothy Day and some of her friends would go and sit in Central Park out in the open as protest against the war. It's a position that wasn't very popular. I think you could say that.
Right.
But she was insistent. Yeah, she was a pacifist during World War II and showed it. So she was arrested many times. she'd advertise it. She and her, she'd be there with some of her close friends and sitting in Central Park and waiting for them to come and arrest her and for not going to the shelter. So it was her way of protest. She was against the Vietnamese War. I mean, she was a total pacifist.
Would you say it's a good comparison that she would be Mother Teresa-like?
Mother Teresa?
Yeah. In the service of the poor, not necessarily.
Yeah,
but very
limited.
Limited.
Yeah, I mean, the different Mother Teresa was not interested in changing structures.
Yeah, just pure service.
Yeah, she's going to go to the Calcutta Railway and get the poor people there who are got sores and maggots and bring them in and give them a dignified dying. Hmm. And she was often criticized for not being like Dorothy Day, that is, trying to change the system. I mean, trying to do something. So Dorothy Day understood that social justice required efforts to change mindsets, to change laws. One of the things that she was big on going on strikes for workers, there was a strike in New York, Cardinal Spellman wouldn't let the grave diggers in the Catholic cemeteries unionize. And so Dorothy Day became a great champion of organizing the workers in Catholic cemeteries into a union, thus going against Cardinal Spellman. But I thought it was interesting. I mean, she didn't demonize Cardinal Spellman because he did a lot of good things that she was ready to recognize. She just said she opposed his view of this. But she says, we still can go to Mass together. We can still receive communion together. Wouldn't that be a good thing for people to be in mind today?
Sure.
Catholics who feel divided politically and so on, to be able to say, we still can go to Mass together. Mass should never be, Eucharist should never be a battleground. It should be a common ground. It should allow us, and Dorothy Day had that so clear in her mind. It brings back her own spiritual regimen, I should say. This woman didn't live in a monastery, but she had a routine. She went to Mass every day. She did morning prayers. She said the rosary during the day. She went and she visited the Blessed Sacrament during the day. She had a routine that she was very faithful to and always said it was that nourishment, spiritual nourishment that she got that enabled her to persevere in her life of serving the poor. So she was a devoted Catholic in many ways.
Love in action?
Yeah, love in action. That's good, yeah. And that love in action is a harsh and dreadful thing. Mm. For her, it meant being with poor people constantly for 50 years. The last time she talked was in Philadelphia in 1976. And she gave a formal address, and her talks always were earthy and real and well thought out and well organized and so on, like her writings were. And she soon after suffered a stroke. Mm. And from then on, she was no longer active. And she lived with her daughter, Tamar, and a granddaughter who she loved. And they brought her great comfort in her last years when she was suffering from diminishments. Mm. She dealt with diminishments pretty good, yeah.
Well, Father Basic, I think Dorothy Day gives us a lot to reflect upon, and this idea of love in action and concrete action,
yeah,
to make things better in the world.
Think we did okay, Brad?
I think we did.
I always wonder, do people have a takeaway?
Well, what do you think? Well, add to that takeaway I just shared. What do you think? Anything additional?
Loving our neighbor is not easy.
Hmm.
It requires sacrifice. And if we're going to improve the world, we need to change social systems. Hmm. How's that?
That's a great takeaway. Powerful.
All right.
Thank you, Brother Basie.